He looked bad, with most of his face already swelling, the black and blue beginning to show. I assumed the rest of his body was just as bad, maybe worse. He shouted,
"We have to fall back! The keepers must be kept safe!"
I didn't feel like arguing. We ran, Jericho staggering between us. Chapter 5. Eva and I made a break for it, half carrying and half dragging Jericho. With every step, he groaned in pain, but there was nothing we could do about it out here in the jungle. Behind us, the Realm 5 dragons were blocking any Karnite chasing us. I felt bad about leaving them behind, but we had to get Jericho out of there. Eva read my mind again, I guess, because she grunted and said,
"I feel bad too, but that's their job. We defend the true, and they defend us. Now focus! We have to get out of here!"
I had begun to sweat, and had to pause to shift my grip on Jericho. He groaned, but then his eyes flicked open, and he looked at me.
"We have to retreat. Away from Paraiso."
He was right. But if an army of Karnites wandered into Paraiso with its wards down and its Tilium gone, the few free trolls and elves that remained would be lost.
"Eva," I said between gasps for air, "we need to head away from Paraiso. Maybe we can lure the Karnites away."
She didn't answer, but we turned east to move away from the elves' home. I looked back once, wishing we could go there. Paraiso had been a paradise that felt like home more than Okana did, but now it was powerless and almost abandoned. We staggered through the jungle as fast as we could. At one spot, the canopy above us opened up and I caught a glimpse of the sun. It told me we'd been running for at least an hour. I could still hear the Karnites crashing through the jungle behind us, but we had gained some distance.
"We have to stop for a minute. We need to check on Jericho. You feel him sweating? That can't be good,"
I said, gasping.
"He's in shock,"
Eva said, and I could hear concern in her voice.
"Lay him down, gently."
We stopped and lowered him to the jungle floor. I pulled out my water skin and knelt beside him.
"Can you hear me? You need some water. No, not too much. There we go. Just sip at it."
I stood and stretched my back, looking around to check out our situation. None of the landmarks looked familiar. Then again, I didn't grow up in the jungle. I had no idea how far from Paraiso we were.
"I hoped he would come around while we ran," I said, "but he's hurt worse than I thought. We need to get him to Okana, or I think he might die."
Jericho's eyes seemed to focus again. Faint and weak, he said.
"We're about 5 miles from Paraiso."
Then he coughed and his whole body shook. I saw a trickle of blood from the corner of his mouth and he grew pale. His eyes rolled up and he passed out again. I hoped he'd wake up a little before we had to continue running for our lives. Eva put her fists on her hips and let out a sharp breath, then said,
"You're right. I wanted to get farther away before we made any decisions, but I don't think Jericho can wait. We're just going to have to hope we're far enough away. What do you think?"
"I think they were just a wandering band who stumbled into Paraiso's territory now that the wards are down. Either way, if they knew where Paraiso was, I don't think we could have drawn them away like this." Eva gave me a curt nod.
"Then it's decided. We get Jericho out of here and hope we don't accidentally draw attention to Paraiso. But there's one more problem."
I frowned.
"Another problem? He's too weak to hold on, much less fly. One of us is going to have to hold him."
I hadn't thought of that. She was right. It was a problem.
"I don't think you're big enough to carry us both so far." "I'll have to do it."
She nodded, but said,
"Do you think you can? We're already tired from carrying him through this jungle."
I rolled my shoulders in circles, stretching my muscles a bit. I would need those to fly. I didn't feel any strains or other injuries, though, despite being kicked for a field goal by a Karnite earlier and an hour-long scramble through the jungle.
"I think I can at least make it to Ellesmere Island. From there, we can call in for help from Okana."
She pursed her lips and nodded. I didn't blame her for being unhappy about the situation. If I cramped up over the Atlantic? She motioned for me to get going, and it looked like it was time for me to step up. The idea of me saving Jericho seemed somehow wrong. I didn't even have full control of my ma here, and I was a terrible warrior. But I was the only one who might be able to help him. I swore to myself that I would never bring this up to him again, if he lived. Then I walked a few feet away and called to my dragon. Claws shot out through my fingertips, and my many-colored scales rose up through my skin. My wings burst out as I stretched them wide over some of the smaller trees. The transition was the smoothest one yet, even though I was exhausted. Quickly, I found my bearings and focused on the task at hand. I concentrated on sending my thoughts to Eva. "Can you get him on my back?" She bent over and struggled to pick up the half-conscious Jericho. The water bottle fell from his hands, but we left it there. I had another. It took her a few minutes of grunting and sweating to get him in place, then a couple more minutes for her to get him situated and secure between her arms as she sat behind him. She said, "All right, let's see what you got, Cole." I took a couple of steps and jumped. I beat down with my wings and rose a few feet into the air, but I didn't have enough speed and landed hard. Eva and Jericho almost fell from my back. I felt Eva patting my side. She said,
"It's okay, Cole, you can do this. Try again, but reach out with your maw here too. Let it flow through you and help push you off the ground."
I launched myself into the air again, beating my wings hard. Summoning my power, I reached out with it just like I would if I was expanding my senses. But instead of seeing or feeling, I willed it to push me away from the ground. Energy flew through me, pushing, and I suddenly felt lighter. It worked. I had the little bit of speed I needed to have more lift. Excited, I flapped hard and we slowly rose up. I still had my energy pushing down on the ground, and so I sensed it when the Carnites rushed into the clearing. One jumped as high as it could and swung its club, but it missed by at least 10 feet. It was sort of scary to realize that if we had waited another minute, they would have caught us. I thought of Realm 5, who had stayed behind to buy us time to escape, but I couldn't feel them. Hopefully, they were simply too far away to sense, but I worried about them. They may have given themselves up to let us escape. The thought was too sad. I pushed it from my mind and focused on flying. Faster and faster, higher and higher over the jungle. I only hoped I could keep that up. It would take hours to get to Ellesmere Island. With all that weight on my back, it took me a half an hour to get up to a good altitude. When I got to the right height, though, flying got a lot easier. Something about wind drag and air pressure, from what little I remembered in my studies. Most of my concentration went into using my maw here to keep Eva and Jericho from being tossed off by the winds. I left it to her to keep any humans on the ground from seeing us. About a half an hour after that, I saw the glittering, beautiful Atlantic Ocean ahead of us. We were nearing Africa's west coast. I focused on Eva and thought at her, "I'm getting tired. I need to land, stretch a bit, and rest my wings. Plus, I could literally eat a horse." I heard her shouting, "I'm sure you're starving by now. Maybe hungrier than I've ever been. Going back and forth between human and dragon eats up your maw here. And don't forget, you've been keeping us safe back here. You need to refuel. You know what that means, right?" To the north, farms stretched along the shore. I angled down, and we gained speed as I lost altitude, heading for the shoreline. Eva said,
"You have to land away from the farms. Call your human and drop us off, and go find some horses, or better yet, a cow."
I felt a little guilty at the thought of eating someone else's cattle, or whatever a group of horses was called. But Jericho's life and the war against the Elden were far more important. If they won the war, the humans would be in for a lot more trouble than just a missing horse or cow. I decided I'd have to do it, even if I felt bad about it. When we got close to the ground, I put my wings back to slow us and then drifted down, landing on my hind legs. For once, I didn't do a faceplant when my front legs hit the dirt. Eva dragged Jericho off my back, trying to be gentle on him. As a dragon, I couldn't do much to help, so she grunted and struggled on her own. When he finally came free, she fell over backward and he landed on top of her. At least she broke his fall.
"Oh yeah, at least I broke his fall. Thanks, Cole."
She flashed a smile, so I knew she wasn't really upset. I did wish she would stop randomly hearing my thoughts, though. I called my human, and the transformation was quick. I rolled my shoulders and stretched my arms out, feeling a little sore from the flight. I wished I knew how to use my maw here to fix the aches and pains. But I was not doing well in my studies, and not just in warrior training. "I'm going to go find some food." She settled Jericho on the ground and got up, dusting herself off.
Don't worry about us. He hasn't spent any ma here since he was hurt, so you don't need to bring any meat back. Just eat it all yourself, okay? You need as much of a recharge as you can get.
I nodded, then headed north, moving slower than I would have liked because of the thick jungle. Vines covered everything, and there were stumps and fallen logs all over the place. I was determined, and I eventually made it out of the jungle and into a clearing. There were two farms, side by side. One was small, with a single ox. They probably used it to help plow their fields. The farm next to it was larger, though, and they had a pen with a bunch of animals. As I got closer, I saw some look like cows, but they were different from any cows I'd ever seen. They were smaller, with long fur. The ox next door would be a lot tastier, but that farm didn't look like they could afford to spare it. Once I got close to the big animal pen, I called my dragon. The shift happened almost immediately, my multicolored scales popping up through my skin in an instant. The cows were suddenly nervous and started to make some noise. I didn't really want any attention, so I grabbed one between my two front legs and jumped into the air, flying back to Eva and Jericho with the thing. I ate the whole funny-looking cow all by myself in less than 15 minutes. I had never been so hungry. Once I picked the bones clean, it was time to get back to work. Eva, are you ready? You're going to have to get him up on my back again. She said she was, but it turned out she wasn't as ready as she thought. It took her 10 minutes to get Jericho up, and another 5 to get him propped up the right way. It wasn't easy, and I hoped she hadn't hurt him even more. Once she told me they were set, I leapt into the air again. This time, I felt stronger. Probably because I had just devoured a whole cow. I got up to the best cruising altitude fast, and from there on, the flying was easier. Up above the clouds, gliding through the thin air, it was a lot easier to keep the winds from blowing Eva and Jericho away. We flew north like that for hours before I spotted Ellesmere Island ahead. Before I could say anything, I heard Eva shouting to let me know we were almost there. I was too tired to use my ma here for anything but the wind barrier, so Eva had to let Okana know where we were and our situation. We made it the rest of the way by simply gliding to the island because that was about all the strength I had left. I sure couldn't have lasted another hour. Once we landed, she dragged Jericho off my back faster than she had the first time, and she didn't fall down. I could see it took all her strength, but she laid him down as gently as she could. I staggered, my exhaustion taking over. I just didn't have any strength left. My ma here was tapped out. With so little left, I couldn't maintain my dragon and started transforming back into my human form. As soon as that was done, I fell to my knees. Next to me, holding Jericho's head in her lap, Eva said,
"A realm of dragons is on its way. I've been using my energy to try to help Jericho, and I don't know if it did any good, but I used up most of my power too."
I could only nod, too tired to answer her. Jericho looked even worse than I felt. His breathing had gone from steady, deep breaths to a rapid, shallow wheezing. He had a trickle of blood coming from the corner of his mouth. I tried to sense his injuries, but I didn't have enough power left in me. All I could feel was his heartbeat. That was enough to scare me, though, since it was beating as fast as a hummingbird's. His whole body suddenly shook, and his breath rattled around in his chest, wet and bubbly. I was no doctor, but my first thought was that he had a punctured lung. I couldn't lose him now, not when help was so close. I grabbed Eva's hand and focused on pushing my energy into him, willing it to flow through him. I only needed to hold him together for a little while longer. I didn't know if it would work, but it was worth a try. Suddenly, I felt a warm tingling in my hand where I touched Eva's. I could feel her ma here flowing into me and through me. There was only a trickle of it, but that was more than I could give him. I cleared my mind and focused on him, using both our power to try to keep him alive. A hand grasped my shoulder gently, startling me. I looked up and saw a human with a Wolan's red eyes. He said,
"You did well, Keeper. We'll take it from here."
My eyes drifted around to find 4 other dragons. One shifted out of his human, and 2 others lifted Jericho onto the dragon's back. One of them followed him up onto the dragon's back and held him steady. 2 more summoned their dragons, and the 5th one, the one who had put his hand on my shoulder, said,
"One of you ride each of them. I can feel how empty your ma here is, Prince, but we don't have time to feed."
As Eva and I climbed aboard, Jericho's dragon mount took to the air and disappeared, along with another dragon. We were left alone on the island with our mounts. A moment later, they were in the air as well, and I could feel my dragon's muscles heaving beneath me. They were flying as fast as they could, I figured. And then, pop, we were descending on Okana, and I'd never been so happy to see it before. Jericho was below me, being lifted from his dragon mount. As we slowed down and banked in to land, they were putting Jericho on a stretcher, and he was whisked away. I wondered where they were taking him. Once we landed, a blue dragon came up to me and bowed slightly.
Prince Colton, we are all happy to see you and the golden dragon safe and well.
I looked away, trying to see where they were taking Jericho. The blue dragon nodded and said,
You're right to worry. His eyes were rolling up and he was breathing his last breath when they landed. Several of us had to use our ma here together just to keep him from passing. You saved his life, you know. The healers will do all they can, of course, and Okana has the best in all the world. If there was any place on Earth where he could live, this is it. You did well to bring him home.
I was too exhausted to care about anything except Jericho, so all I really heard from her speech was that he almost died and they were trying to keep him alive. That was enough to understand, for now. It was far more than I could have given him on my best day, and with this being one of the worst, I couldn't ask for much more. Chapter 6 Eva and I waited outside Jericho's room, pacing. It felt like I'd been there for hours, and maybe I had. Some of the healers told me to get some rest. I'm sure I looked terrible after wearing myself out on that long flight to Ellesmere Island, but there was no way I'd leave Jericho until he woke up. If he even did. My parents, Rylan and Sela, not the humans I grew up with, had come by once for about 20 minutes, and it had taken me a while to stop being angry at them for leaving. I knew they had a kingdom to run and a war to get ready for, but part of me still felt they should be there for him. Or maybe I was angry they left Eva and me here alone. Eva must have seen my expression because after they left, she said,
They are being there for him. By defending Okana, they'll make sure he still has a kingdom to protect when he wakes up.
I gave her a nod. She was right and I knew it, so I tried to set aside my feelings. It didn't help anyone for me to stay angry about things I knew were outside of anyone's control. I still kept pacing, though. It irritated Eva, but she didn't say anything. She knew I needed to keep moving so I didn't lose my mind. An hour later, the lead healer came out of Jericho's room. She had a sour look on her face until she spotted us and put on her doctor face, calm and clinical. I went over to her right away, eager to hear any news. She held up her hand to stop me.
Before you hit me with 1,000 questions, let me tell you what you really want to know. Counselor Jericho has several broken bones. His lungs were punctured in 2 places and he had a lot of internal bleeding. We can make Ma here do wondrous things to heal, but it has its limits. Is he dying?
I blurted, unable to stop myself before the words came out. She shook her head.
I can't say for sure. It depends on how strong he is and how much he wants to live. But this is Jericho we're talking about. If anyone can survive those injuries, he can.
It was true, too. Not just me trying to convince myself.
We'll have healers working on him for as long as their Ma here remains. But they have to stop and eat. They need to recharge sometimes. There's also a limit to how much we can do at once without straining his body. That would do more harm than good.
I looked down at my feet and took a deep breath. I had experienced draining all my Ma here before, so I knew what she was talking about. I just didn't like it.
When will we be able to go see him?
She gave me a faint smile and put her hand on my shoulder. Looking me in the eye, she said,
I believe we might be able to wake him up after this current treatment is done. We have 2 healers in the room, working on his lungs. Once they use up all their energy, Jericho should wake up by himself shortly after. We can't be sure what condition he'll be in mentally, but like you said, if anyone can survive those injuries, he can.
The exhausted-looking healer walked away, leaving the hallway empty except for Eva and me. I knew the treatments lasted about 30 minutes, having watched the healers coming and going for a while by that time. I let out a deep sigh, then went to go sit by Eva to wait it out. She grabbed my hand. I didn't know if she was trying to comfort me, or if she needed comforting, or both. Either way, I appreciated it. The last healer came out of Jericho's room and stopped long enough to tell us he should be awake soon, and that we should be there when he did. That was the whole reason Eva and I had been sitting there for hours, but I thanked her. Then Eva and I waited inside the bear room. Jericho lay on his bed, eyes closed, hands folded across his stomach. In one corner, his assistant was reading a book. She looked a lot like Mira, my own assistant. She glanced up and saw that it was me and bolted to her feet to bow. "No," I said. "No need for that. We're all just here for Jericho. Have a seat, read your book. Pay us no mind." There were two wooden stools next to the bed, and I plopped down on one. Eva joined me on the other. It didn't take long for Jericho to stir. I had been sort of absent-mindedly sensing him with my Mahir to keep distracted, tracking his breathing and his heartbeat. The first thing I noticed was his pulse speeding up a little bit, and his breathing wasn't as even. His eyelids fluttered open, and he tried to say something, but coughed instead. Eva handed him a glass of water and helped him take a few sips. The effort seemed to drain him, and he lay back and closed his eyes for a moment. After he caught his breath, he opened his eyes again and gave Eva a quick nod. That was as much thanks as she was likely to get from him. He tried to talk again, but this time his voice was less cracked.
"Pleased you're okay, both of you. The keepers need to be kept safe."
I smiled at him. "I'm okay, but only because of what you did. I think I owe you my life." He shook his head faintly.
"My duty. My honor. Don't owe."
Eva reached out and rested her hand on his arm.
"So, how does it feel to be a golf ball?"
I grinned. He really had taken quite a whack, but I wasn't sure he would get the humor. Did Wolins play golf?
"I feel like I've been run over by a steamroller," he said,
some of his strength coming back to him.
"But something is wrong. Deep inside, something with my ma here. I can't be sure. All I know is, I have no strength."
I could tell that just by looking at him.
"When will you be better? We need you. I don't think I can do this without you. I'm not ready to save the world all alone."
It was awkward telling him my fears, because Jericho had no room for fear in his world. But I wasn't going to lie to him. We did need help. He actually gave me a faint smile, which surprised me. He said,
"You aren't alone. You're only one half of the Keeper of Dragons, and the other half is your true friend. You have Cairo, who would go to the ends of the earth to protect Eva. You have your parents, who love you, even though they only just met you. You have every dragon in Okana and every free elf and fairy, plus the trolls that remain."
I forced a smile onto my face and said,
"You shouldn't talk so much. You're weak and need to save your strength."
He was right, though. I had three kingdoms supporting me, and my best friend. Meanwhile, Jericho was bedridden and somehow sick, and I was feeling sorry for myself. I straightened my back, sitting taller on the stool.
"Of course, you're right. Now the question is, what do we do next?"
Eva blurted.
"We go see the mermaids! A fourth kingdom to help us!"
I waited for him to argue with her. Instead, he closed his eyes for a moment. With my ma here sensing him, I felt his exhaustion.
"I know there's no stopping the golden dragon, no matter what I say, as long as I'm here in bed. She'll convince you to go to the mermaids, and you'll follow her. Too tired to fight, so I'm just going to go with it. Maybe she's right. I doubt it, but I hope I'm wrong."
Eva grinned and gave him a wink, even though his eyes were still closed. She said,
"Well, you're right about that, so where do we find them?"
He coughed, a wet and raspy sound. It didn't seem as bad as it had before, but I could hear the fluid in his lungs. When his coughing eased, he said,
"You'll find them in the Dead Sea. Trust the fates. If you're meant to find them, you will. We haven't spoken to them in a long time, and I have no idea how you'll be received. Their leader is Queen Desla. Find her. Tell her what's at stake."
Eva nodded, enthusiastic.
"Thank you. I just have this feeling that we're meant to go there. I couldn't tell you why."
He didn't reply, and I thought maybe he had passed out again. Then he opened his eyes and looked right at me.
"One more thing. In their kingdom grows a certain plant. Whatever this is that I feel deep within me, it might help me. If you can, get a handful of that. Queen Desla will know of the plant. I might be able to do without it, but I just feel so weak. Not sure I have the strength, even with the help of the healers. I only wish we'd known of this plant for your Uncle Jago.
Jericho's voice trailed off. I clenched my fist and nodded. I'll get that weed no matter what. I'll make them give it to me. I glanced at Eva, who looked at me oddly. Maybe she didn't understand my determination. The Pharaohs had killed my uncle, and now the Karnites might kill Jericho. All because of Eldric. Jericho's heart slowed down a bit, and his breathing became slow and steady. He's gone back to sleep. Eva patted his arm and said,
Let him sleep. He needs all the rest he can get. Come on, let's go. We need to get ready for a long trip. Then you need to say goodbye to your parents.
After we left Jericho, Eva went to her room to bathe and change while I went to go find my parents. In the middle of all this, I didn't know if I would see the king and queen again. Maybe I hadn't grown up with them, but they were still my parents. I knew they loved me, anyway. In a way, I loved them too, even though I didn't know them. There was a sort of bond in being related by blood. I found Rylan in the throne room, at the head of a line of assistants with papers for him to read and sign. Being the king didn't look like a lot of fun. As I entered, his eyes locked on mine and he smiled.
Colton, my son, it is so good to see you. Come, sit next to me. Let's talk.
I walked up the steps to the platform and sat on the smaller throne to Ryland's right. The king waved the assistants away. They made their way to the back of the throne room, giving us our privacy.
How is Jericho? Rylan asked.
I haven't had time to go visit him in hours.
I squirmed a little in the uncomfortable throne. No matter how I shifted, I couldn't quite get settled in. My whole life was kind of like that now.
He's still badly wounded, and he seems to have some sort of sickness. He thinks it's his Mahir. The healer's Mahir isn't curing it, something about how he's reached the limits of how much the healers can help him. If they keep pouring Mahir into him, it will do more harm than good.
Rylan looked up at the ceiling for a moment, and he looked troubled.
I see. So then, whether he recovers depends mostly on how strong he is. It's a good thing that if anyone is strong enough, our friend Jericho is.
My father didn't sound convinced. Maybe the news I brought would help him deal with it better. Or maybe he'd refuse to let Eva and me go. I decided I would go anyway, if that's where Eva went. But I had to tell him our plans. I took a deep breath, then said,
Eva and I are going to the Dead Sea to bring the mermaids into the Elven Alliance. The good news is that some sort of special plant grows in the Mermaid Kingdom, and Jericho says it could heal him. I just need to grab a handful while we're there, and then the healers can do the rest.
Rylan nodded and gave me a faint smile.
Yes, I think I know the one you mean. It's the one that has more yellow than green and grows on a stalk like kelp, but I forget the name.
Rylan closed his eyes and sighed.
I am told if we had known of such plant, it may have saved my brother.
Rylan's eyes flashed open and studied me.
Going to the mermaids would not have been my first choice, but if the Keeper of Dragons have both decided that's the best course, then I'll leave it to fate. You're destined to drive back the time of fear. Whatever you two do together, things will happen the way they're meant to. Who am I to get in the way of that?
That was surprising. I had figured he'd demand we go to Greece, or maybe some other plan I hadn't thought of. The trust he put in me made me think of my nightmare, where everyone cheered at me and believed I would succeed, even while the darkness was coming for them. I shoved that thought away. If I dwelled on it too much, I might freeze up and do nothing at all. Whether going to see the mermaids was the best plan or not, it was still better than just sitting in Okana, waiting for the end to come. I said,
Eva and I are leaving right away. We'll head back to Paraiso first, pick up Cairo and Realm 5, then go east to meet the mermaids.
He let out a long breath, like all the fight had left him. I suppose he was afraid of losing me, yet the whole world depended on him letting me go. In a way, I was glad my real parents, the ones I grew up with, didn't have to know about what I was doing. I missed them so much, and I know they would have feared for me greatly.
He said, Then I suppose you had better get going, my son. Your mother's heart and mine go with you. I'm afraid for you, but I know this is what you were born to do, you and Eva both. I just wish this hadn't happened in your lifetime. Sela is sad she hasn't had the time to get to know you better since you came back to us.
Then he stood and faced me, so I got up too. I was kind of surprised when he leaned forward and gave me a quick hug instead of putting his hand on my shoulder or shaking my hand like he usually did. He must have been really afraid for me, and Jericho getting hurt couldn't have helped him feel better about it. When I came back with those leaves for Jericho, and he got better, maybe Rylan would feel better too. I smiled at the thought, and he smiled back at me. Then it was time to go. After stopping at another farm along the African coast to eat, Eva and I landed back in Paraiso to gather up Cairo and Realm 5 before heading east. Now that the decision had been made to go see the mermaids, I was kind of excited. It wasn't very long ago that I thought mermaids didn't exist. Neither did dragons or elves. We both shifted back into our humans as we landed. I was getting much better at it, and could usually do it in the blink of an eye now.
"Let's go find Cairo," Eva said.
I grinned. I had no idea why Cairo didn't want to tell her he thought they were soulmates, because, to me, it was pretty obvious she felt the same way, even without knowing about the weird, magic soul-bonding thing Cairo thought it was. She said,
"What? Don't smile at me like that. You know he and I have just gotten close since I got here. I mean, we work together every day. It's only natural."
I shrugged and smirked. I didn't say a word. Eva rolled her eyes and I fought the urge to laugh. A new voice to my right shouted,
"Eva, Prince Colton, I'm so glad you two made it back. How is Jericho?"
I looked down at the ground. It was good to see Cairo again, but I really didn't want to have to tell him about Jericho. Thankfully, Eva answered before it got awkward.
"The healers brought him through the worst of his danger, at least for the moment. He says he feels some sort of sickness with his ma here. He also gave us his blessing to try to recruit the mermaids. I know it wasn't his first choice, but with him bedridden, he knew he couldn't stop us. Plus, there's a plant that grows there he asked us to gather for him."
I added, "Get the dragons ready to fly out. We'll head east again just as soon as Eva and I get something to eat. We only ate enough along the way for us to get here safely." Cairo nodded, then waved over a Woland and told her to make sure we got all the food we needed. He said,
"Food is on the way. Now then, I thought the plan was to head to Greece where the rest of the fairies are. Just because Jericho can't get out of bed doesn't mean he was wrong."
Eva glared at him and said,
"Oh, so you don't believe he gave us his blessing? I would have thought you, out of everyone here, would trust me. Well, Mister thinks he knows everything. I guess you didn't get the memo. Jericho said we should go after the mermaids, which you would know if you had been at your friend's side when he woke up, like we were."
Cairo stood his ground. He looked her in the eye and said,
"Someone as badly hurt as Jericho might say just about anything in that condition. And you're being unfair. You know perfectly well that I was here doing my job. I'm always doing my job. I sided with you earlier about going to the mermaids. You had a good point, but Jericho was right. We can't waste our resources chasing the mermaids."
Both Eva and Cairo stood tall, backs straight and fists clenched. It was clear neither was going to back down. Emotions were running high with everything that had happened recently, and it seemed both were ready to take their frustration out on the other. Hoping to stop the standoff, I said,
"Actually, Jericho did say that. It was something along the lines of, since he couldn't stop us from going, then he wished us luck and put his support behind us. Behind Eva, actually, because I still think we need to head north. I'm telling you, my dream."
Eva clenched her fists tighter and yelled in frustration, glaring back and forth between Cairo and me. Not backing down, Cairo said,
"I know you're mad, but listen to reason. We need to go after the Carnites. They're going to be the easiest ones to find out of all our enemies. And they might lead us to a clue on King Eldric's location, or even where the elves and trolls are being held."
I snarled,
"You can't cut me off and then ignore what I said. I'm telling you, as the Keeper of Dragons, we need to head north. I don't see why we're even arguing about this. That's where the elves and trolls are."
"And since when were we planning on chasing the Carnites?" Eva gave us each a final glare and then turned on her heels to walk away. Cairo and I both looked after her in disbelief. Over her shoulder, she said,
"When you two are done arguing with each other and ignoring what I have to say, then we'll talk. But I'm not going to let you treat me like this. I'm going to get something to eat, and you two can beat the snot out of each other for all I care."
She let out a shout of frustration and stormed back toward the dragon encampment in Paraiso. Cairo and I watched her leave, and I realized my jaw had dropped. I snapped my mouth shut and looked at Cairo. He looked back at me and shrugged helplessly.
"I can't believe she was so mad at us. I mean, it's just one little disagreement, right? We'd have figured it out eventually."
I could only shake my head at him. He didn't know Eva the way I did. She never just walked away from any fight. unless she was really angry and had enough. Actually, I think you're on thin ice with her. Trust me on this. Eva is way angrier than you think, and she can hold a grudge when she wants to. I let out a deep sigh, letting my frustration flow away. She was my best friend, but she was making a mistake, and Cairo was letting her. I added, if you honestly believe that stuff you said about being her Vericelli, I think you need to go and apologize, whether you think you did anything wrong or not. Seriously, this is the time to tell her you believe that you two are soulmates. If you don't, things might really get away from you. I wouldn't leave it to chance like that. Cairo's eyes flared, flashing red. His whole body stiffened and he stood straighter. It was clear I had stepped over some invisible line in the sand. He said, I'm not ready for that. This isn't the right time. You think you're the only one who knows her? I don't think you give her enough credit, Cole. Anyway, it's between me and her whether we're soulmates. It has nothing to do with you. With all due respect, you need to back off and leave me alone right now. If you want to stay here and follow me around arguing, whatever happens will be on your hands. I couldn't believe what I just heard. I didn't think he would really hurt me, but he was definitely ready to take a swing. I had no idea what would happen to him if he did, considering that I'm the Prince of Okana and the Keeper of Dragons. I didn't want to find out. No matter how mad I was at him at the moment, he was a good dragon and loyal to Okana, and I didn't want anything to happen to him. So I turned around and walked away, fuming. I swore that later, after we had both cooled off a bit, Cairo and I were going to have a long talk and straighten things out between us, one way or another. Chapter 7. I looked down on the small room almost as though I floated above it. King Eldric stood over someone sitting in a chair, but I couldn't see who it was. Eldric blocked my view.
I promise you, the pain will end when you tell me what I want to know.
Eldric's voice sounded like he had a sneer on his face.
I'll tell you nothing, not because of who he is, but because of who you are.
The voice sounded familiar, and it only took a moment to realize it was the elven princess Clara, Gaber's sister. Eldric stepped around behind her, and I could finally see both of their faces. He said,
I don't see why you protect him. After all these years, you don't owe him anything. He's certainly not out there looking for you, Clara. He's back in Okana, doing nothing.
She shook her head and glared.
Someone is looking for me. I sense it. And when they find me, your time will be done, traitor.
He laughed and said,
That's a good one. You call me a traitor? The king and queen were traitors to their race. I tried to make us strong, the strongest of them all, and for my efforts...
They exiled you, even though your crime deserved death. You were only spared because you're part of our family, or you were until you came back and killed our parents. Tell me, Eldric, how does killing two of the five originals make my race stronger?
Eldric's grip on the chair back tightened, his knuckles turning white from the force, but his voice sounded calm as he said,
Our race, not yours, and that's water under the bridge. I can't change the past, nor can you, but we can still look to the future.
She snarled.
There is no future in dishonor.
He ignored her.
Being crushed by a Karnite should have done it, yet he lives. Tell me how to kill him, and I'll let you free to go rejoin your brother. I'll keep all of our cousins here as collateral, but the pain will stop. Think about it, Clara. You can choose right now to go free and end their suffering. Or you can keep protecting a dragon, not even one of us. You two were over a long time ago. I promise you'll be okay. You don't owe him anything.
Clara snarled back at him.
You want me to turn to the darkness just like you and your followers did. Never! Elves are strongest when we embrace our nature, our truth. I'll never help you, no matter what it costs us.
Eldric laughed and reached out to a table that I couldn't see well. When he drew his hand back, he carried a small, wicked knife.
I would say this isn't going to hurt, but that would be a lie. Are you ready?
I sat bolt upright in bed, Clara's screams echoing in my ears. I was covered in sweat and shivered in the cold night air. Why did I keep having these dreams? I didn't know what they all meant, and had a feeling I was missing some part of a bigger picture. I didn't think they were really dreams at all. They felt real. I decided to go for an early morning walk to calm myself down a bit, and threw on my clothes before walking outside. I blinked down to the jungle floor, then strolled towards the elves' mystical lake with my head down, lost in thought about the dreams. Before I ever made it to the lake shore, I heard a loud bang. I stopped and listened, trying not to even breathe so I could hear well. There were some rustling noises, and I walked toward them. In a small clearing at the jungle's edge, just outside of Paraiso, Cairo was stuffing supplies into a backpack. Was he leaving? What could make a dragon like him abandon his duty? He was supposed to be here protecting Eva. Tell me you aren't just running away, Cairo. I'd be mighty disappointed, and I think Eva would too. I clenched my jaw and stared at him, angry and ready to take a swing. Tell me why you're running away now when we all need you most. He looked up, startled. It seemed he hadn't heard me approaching. I'm not running away. I'm a bit offended you would think that. The truth is, Eva left in the middle of the night to go find the mermaids without us. I guess she got tired of waiting. I'm going to find her. She's not safe out there alone, and we can't risk losing the golden dragon. My jaw dropped. How could she do that? She knew how dangerous it was out there. Then again, she always was the braver of us. Well, I couldn't let Cairo go alone. Not when he was determined to go out and find Eva himself. And something told me he wouldn't wait for me to gather a team to help track Eva. I took a deep breath, shoved my anger aside, and said, "We have to find her. We should work together. We'll be safer together than apart." He nodded and said, 10 minutes. Then he began stuffing things back into his backpack. I blinked back up to my room and grabbed my own pack. I had never unpacked it, so I just slung it over my shoulder. A couple minutes later, I was back with Cairo. He gave me a nod, then turned and began walking east. My senses tell me she was walking. I don't know why she didn't fly, but we can't just turn into our dragons. I'd lose track of her from the air. I frowned. That meant it would take longer to find her, if we could even catch up to her. Are you sure you'll be able to find her? How? Cairo said, I told you, we are soulmates. Vera Salih can use Arma here to reach out and sense our soulmate's direction. When we get close to her, I'll be able to feel it more clearly. But like I said, if we fly, we'll be moving too quickly and I'll lose her path. Together, we moved away from Paraiso and deeper into the jungle. We walked for the rest of that morning, stopped for a quick lunch of berries and plants we'd gathered along the way, then continued on. The hours ticked by. From the occasional glimpses of the sun overhead through the jungle canopy, I guessed it to be about 4 o'clock. As we reached the top of a small hill and began walking down, headed ever eastward, I sensed something. I had my Mahir pushed outward, hoping I could sense any danger or humans we came across before we were seen. I said, Stop! There's something dark nearby, and it's heading our way. No, wait. There's more than one. 5, 7. 10. I count 10 of them. Cairo's head whipped around as he looked for any danger. How far away are they? And what are they? Suddenly, my senses reeled. Whatever was out there, they were powerful. And familiar. Chapter 8. Eldon, 10 of them. A few hundred yards away and coming on fast. They're almost on us. I muttered as I concentrated on the Eldon. He said in a half-whisper, Eldon, we have to hide. There's no way we can win against 10 of them. I didn't need to be told twice. The Eldon must have known where we were somehow, because the odds of them coming straight at us were just too small. I felt fear rising up in my belly. I looked around, desperate to find a place to hide from the approaching Eldon, but there was nowhere that looked good enough. But if they knew where we were, there was no use in hiding anyway. Not here. To our east, something moved. A quick glance told me it was the Elden reaching the top of a small hill. One of them pointed at us. I looked at Cairo.
Too late! They found us!
His eyes widened, just for a split second, and he said,
Run!
Once again, we found ourselves running for our lives. There was no way we could beat so many of them, and in the back of my mind, I wondered where they had come from. I wish I knew how they'd found us. We ran as fast as we could, our Mahir helping give us energy. I really wanted to ask why we didn't just turn into dragons and fly away, but Cairo was an experienced Woland. If he didn't shift, it must have been for a good reason. I shoved that thought aside and focused on running. We bolted down a little path between two low, rolling hills. I realized we were trying to stay out of sight as much as possible while we ran. Then, up ahead, about 50 feet, a pair of Elden came into view. Their black, beady eyes and razor-sharp teeth zeroed in on us, and they charged. Cairo slowed and pulled his sword, so I did the same, but we didn't stop. Side by side, we crashed into the two scouts. There was a quick flash of blades as Cairo defeated one and I held off the other. Then he dealt with the one attacking me.
Come on, we have to get out of here,
he half-shouted before putting his sword away and sprinting north again. I was hot on his heels. We kept moving long past the point I should have been exhausted. I found it easier to use my Tilium to keep the fatigue away. But Cairo wasn't having any problem keeping up using Mahir. It was an odd thing to think about at that moment. An arrow streaked past my face and I almost missed a step. Cairo shouted to keep going, so I did. I put my head down and ran as fast as I could. We rounded another hill and up ahead, a forest stretched into the distance. My heart leapt for joy. All we had to do was get to the tree line and we might be able to lose our pursuers. Cairo saw it too, because he changed direction to head directly at it. The minutes passed as the forest came closer and closer, but there were no more arrows flying by. I didn't look back to check, but I figured the Elden decided they could run faster without trying to shoot us. Once they closed the distance or chased us into exhaustion, they'd have plenty of time to shoot us. It was not a pleasant thought. One instant, we were running through open, rolling plains, probably visible for miles, and then we burst through the tree line.
Ha! Let them try to shoot us running through that thick jungle.
My Tilium was slowly draining. I knew it wouldn't last forever, and I figured the Elden had more of it than I did. When I ran out, I would be able to switch to my Mahir, but Cairo would just be out of power. I couldn't leave him behind, so I'd have to stop, and we'd have to fight the Elden alone, whether he had any Mahir left or not. That seemed like a bad idea, so I said,
We have to hide. They'll outrun us eventually.
You're right. Follow me.
There wasn't time to ask questions, so I just followed him through the forest, jumping over logs and dodging branches as best we could. The twigs and branches still left scratches and cuts on my face and arms. I noticed he was running us right at a large clump of fallen trees that formed a huge bramble. I really hoped he was going to go around it, but no such luck. He shouted,
Hide in there!
Then he jumped. And when he landed, he slid into the big cluster like he was sliding into home plate. I did the same.
Give me your hand, he said.
Before I could reach out, he snatched my hand in his and closed his eyes. I could feel his power surging, just like I could feel mine being drained. Whatever he was doing, I hoped it would work. Not far behind us, I could hear the Elden scrambling and shouting as they crashed through the woods. They were coming through the trees like hunters. Spread out to find us. All of a sudden, one stopped and shouted. The other stopped too, gathering around him. A second later, he pointed west, to the right of where I lay hidden in the brambles. The whole troop ran off in that direction. They seemed to think they were hot on our trail from the way they were carrying on. Then their voices faded with distance. When I decided they would be out of earshot, I looked at Cairo and raised one eyebrow. I didn't know what he had done, but I was sure curious. He had his eyes closed, and I waited like that minute after minute. I started counting my heartbeats, just to have something to focus on and take away the fear. About 4 minutes later, he opened his eyes and grinned at me.
What did you do? I asked.
I made every tree in the forest look like us, he said. It sure confused them, but when I started letting go of the disguise in different parts of the forest, it made it look like we were running west. Then when our little hiding spot was going to be the only place around here that still showed us to their powers, I used your energy to make us seem like trees. They could have seen right through it if they were close enough, but they were tracking us with their tilium, not their eyes. I don't know how they were following us.
That was incredible. So you mean to say we look like trees to them right now? He smirked and seemed awfully full of himself over the whole thing. Although I had to admit, it was pretty clever. I grinned back at him.
He said, "They're running west, so we should head east."
Yeah, that was the way we were going, right? I don't think that's changed, so I guess it's a good thing you sent them west.
He chuckled, and we climbed out from under the brambles. For the next few miles, as we walked fast to the east, he still kept hold of my hand. It slowed us down, but I could feel him still using my energy. He was probably still luring those Elden away from us, so I didn't mind. After a few miles, he let go of my hand. I suddenly felt how low my Mahir was. I sensed his power had been mostly drained, too. We walked in silence, trying to slowly absorb more Mahir and recharge a bit. I was sure we would need it again, probably sooner than I wanted. Only a big meal of meat would let us recharge quickly, though. We finally came to the end of that stretch of jungle and stepped back out into the bright light of day. This time, there were no gentle hills, only flatlands. It was kind of scary looking, or depressing. Maybe both. We kept walking. A few hours after that, we dove back into another jungle. This one wasn't as thick as the last one had been, and it didn't look like it was quite as large, but the sun was ready to go down soon.
"Maybe we should make camp here," I said. "The trees will give us some cover, and if any more Elden come along, it will give us something for you to disguise us with."
He nodded.
"Good idea. After you, my prince."
He held his hand out toward the forest. Once we were fairly deep inside the woods, we made camp. Cairo used his dragon breath to start a fire. I couldn't wait to have control of mine. It burned low and slow, and I hoped it wouldn't give away our position, but the forest was damp. I figured it would get pretty cold at night. Getting hypothermia wouldn't help our mission, so it was worth Cairo spending that little bit of energy. Besides, as we slept, our power would recharge. As the daylight went away and darkness fell, we cooked a couple of rabbits Cairo had caught. We set them up on spits to cook over low flames, slowly turning them by hand while we chatted about Eva, Jericho, and so many other things. I didn't know why we both felt the need to fill the silence. Maybe we were both just scared and trying to distract ourselves. But we ended up talking more in that couple of hours than we ever had before. After one of the inevitable lulls in conversation, he looked at me intently.
"What, do I have some rabbit on my face?"
After a pause, he said,
"How do they keep following us? That's what I want to know. I didn't mention it to you, but when we were going through the jungle earlier, there were a couple of times where I had to use my power to hide us from different patrols. They all seem to be heading in whatever direction I made the jungle illusion look like we went. I keep expecting Elden or Karnites to pop up right in front of us. You can bet I'm going to sleep with one eye open. Whether I'm watching for Elden or watching you, I haven't decided yet."
I cocked my head.
"I don't think you really need to watch me. What makes you think I have something to do with that?"
"Simple. It didn't happen until you and I were alone together. Maybe you brought the Karnites that almost killed Jericho, for all I know."
"You know I would never do that. Why would I? I've been fighting them every step of the way, and you know it."
I was starting to get angry at him. It definitely hurt my feelings, and my natural reaction to that was to get mad. I didn't think I could get to the mermaids and Eva by myself, though, so I bit my tongue. It was hard not to say everything else that was on my mind, especially after the friendliest chat we'd ever had before.
"The only thing I do know is that they're following us. Not just one group, but several. That means they're coming from farther out than I can push my senses. And that means..."
"That means that they either planted something on one of us that they can track from a long way away, or one of us is reaching out to tell them where we're at. Is that what you're going to say?"
Cairo let out a deep breath and seemed suddenly very interested in his hands. He stared at them as he said,
"Yes, that pretty much sums it up. The thing is, I don't really think you're a traitor. You're the keeper of dragons, after all. If you're a traitor, then the whole world is doomed. I don't want to believe that."
There was no point in answering him. If he thought I was a traitor, he wouldn't trust me anyway, and if he didn't think so, then I didn't know any more than he did. I looked up through the trees and into the sky, taking a deep breath. The forest smelled wonderful. If the Elden won, then simple pleasures like this would probably be gone soon. That was depressing, so I decided to think of other things, like how we were going to get through the night without being tracked. Cairo, will you show me how to do your trick where you disguised us as trees back there in the jungle? That way we can sleep in shifts and you won't be completely drained by morning. It didn't take long for him to show me how to do it. It seemed simple enough, and like everything with Mahir, it involved simple willpower more than anything else. I decided to take first watch and let him get some sleep. He needed it more than me. It was really boring, but that was a good thing. Boredom meant our hunters weren't trying to kill us at that moment. I was also relieved. The fact that Cairo let me take first watch meant that, deep down, he knew he could trust me. Halfway through the night, I woke Cairo. When I was sure he was fully awake, I lay down on the soft forest floor, using my elbow as a pillow, and dozed off into an uneasy sleep. The next morning, Cairo greeted me with a couple of eggs cooking on a hot rock and some sort of a flat, dry biscuit he made with some cornmeal from his little backpack. I was practically starving. It wasn't much food, but at least he shared. I couldn't ask for more than that. It wasn't like there was a convenience store anywhere out here in an African jungle, after all. We gathered up our things and headed east again. We were making good time toward the Dead Sea. I figured Eva had probably already arrived and was talking to the mermaids without me. I was a little sad at the thought. The idea of meeting real mermaids was kind of exciting. During our walk, we had to hide twice, but it was easy to avoid being spotted. Since Cairo had taught me the trick of looking like trees to their Tilium senses, it got easier each time I tried to do it. Now, I barely used any power. After that, there was more walking. Anyone who said walking wasn't a great exercise had never done it like we did that day. It wasn't like walking on a road where everything was flat and level. Walking cross-country was totally different, and every step meant we had to climb, duck, sidestep, or push through something. Every step was tiring. Thankfully, I had my Mahir and Tilium to keep me energized and alert. We finally reached low, rolling hills again, and the walking became a little harder, but it became a lot easier to hide us. That's what Cairo said, anyway. He kept busy camouflaging us while I pushed my senses outward, trying to sense any threats coming in our direction. I stopped suddenly, by reflex, and planted my hand on Cairo's chest. My body had reacted before my mind registered the threat, but it only took half a second for me to realize what it was. Something bad was in the valley on the far side of the hill we were climbing. Something big and evil. "Carnites," I whispered hoarsely. Cairo grabbed me by the front of my shirt and hit the ground, dragging me down with him. He nodded toward the top of the hill, then turned and began to slither on his belly. I followed. It took maybe 20 minutes to get to the top, but when we did, my jaw dropped. Down in the valley between three different low hills was a group of huge Carnites sitting around, talking. And in the center, I saw a familiar face. Eva! She had been captured! Next to me, I heard Cairo whisper, "Oh no." My thoughts exactly. Chapter 9. I could practically feel Cairo tensing up. He said, "No, this can't be happening. We have to rescue her." He started to scramble to his feet. I realized he was about to rush in to try to save Eva from the Carnites. We'd never save her once they knew we were there. As he rose, I wrapped my arms around his waist and locked my hands together, then used my whole weight to drag him back down to the ground. "Be smart," I hissed. When he struggled again, I squeezed even harder, hoping to knock the wind out of him. "Yes, we have to rescue her. You won't do it by rushing in and trying to fight three Carnites by yourself. You'll only get her killed, and you with her. I won't let you do it." I was gasping from the effort of trying to hold him down. After a couple of seconds of struggling, he said, "Cole, let me go. You're going to give away our position." His face was turning red as he tried to get out of my grasp. "Then stop fighting me. We have to talk about this."
The Karnites don't know we're here. We can surprise them, but only if you don't rush off and do something stupid.
A couple of seconds later, he relaxed. Hesitantly, I released him, but I didn't unlock my grip. No longer resisting, Cairo said,
"Okay, thanks."